Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have us on the line, Dr. Jack Wheaton. We're going to be talking about his book, The Crisis in Christian Music, Part 2, The Paganization of Music. So, Dr. Wheaton, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure.
Well, this is the third time we've had Dr. Wheaton on, because we think it's an important book. We're carrying the book. People must understand what is happening, not only in our society and in the rock concert and the whole rock industry, but what is happening in our churches as we bring this type of music into our churches. So with that as a background, Dr. Wheaton, why don't you sort of perhaps tell our listeners just a little bit about who you are and why you've written these books?
My background is strong in music, as you would guess. My father was a musician. I grew up in a musical home, and I studied and joined the Musicians Union when I was 16, was active as a professional player, got my bachelor's degree at University of Denver and master's at University of Northern Colorado, and eventually my doctorate at USC. Always maintained a dual career of playing music and writing music and teaching it, actually a triple career. And in the process of that, I did a lot of research on music and had to write music for motion pictures. I did 6 film soundtracks when I was in Hollywood. And also did a lot of research on tribal music in Africa and Asia and so forth, and came together in a book called All That Jazz, A History of Afro-American Music, which is available on Amazon.com. But as I became active in the Christian music world, I became more and more disturbed by some of the things I was hearing and seeing. And I ended up writing my book, Crisis in Christian Music, and that's been out for about 7-8 years now. And just finished the volume 2, Crisis in Christian Music, The Paganization of Worship. And so that's where we are at this particular point in time.
And, of course, what did you learn about music in that first book that you wrote, All That Jazz? Certainly this had a profound impact upon the people of Africa, didn't it? And didn't they then bring that influence over here to America?
Yes, I found out that the religions of most of the tribal countries of the world were based upon calling up spirits. And the calling up spirits were done through rhythms. You find this in Tibet, you find it in Polynesia, you find it in Africa, you find it in Latin America. When the slaves were brought to the New World, they brought these rhythms and these tribal gods, and they amalgamated them with Christianity, particularly with Catholicism, and changed the names of the gods to saints, and they survived better in Latin America than they did up in North America, where the Protestant faith kind of frowned on that kind of thing.
All right, so there really was then a spiritual component to the music that came out of Africa.
Yes, there was, a very definitive one that is certainly contrary to what we go to church for as a Christian.
Well, I think that it's what's so difficult is for the average individual to realize that there's a very definite relationship between certain rhythms and certain types of music and the spirits from the dark side. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, sir. There's almost a total naivety about it. It's sad to say. One of the reasons why I'm working on another book for the general society called The Power of Music.
Hold that thought right there, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Jack Wheaton, who has his degree in music. And, of course, he has taught music, he's played music, he's written music. And at one time, he wrote the scores for a number of motion pictures in Hollywood. And then, of course, as he became very, very increasingly concerned about the effect of music. And he wrote his first book. It was called All That Jazz, in which he studied the tribal music of so many of the pagan countries and found that the rhythms of the music there were used to conjure up spirits. The average American really doesn't even believe in the spirit world. We're too sophisticated for that, but certainly they do in the tribal countries of the world, in Africa and in Asia. And rhythm had a great deal to do with conjuring up the spirits and, of course, bringing the people within these religions into contact with this spirit world, with this other world, which, of course, most people don't recognize, but is very, very real, for we indeed are involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, yes, but even on a religious battlefield. Now, what about when these rhythms come into the church?
Well, when they come to the church, it's the devil's way of getting his foot in the sanctuary. And the fact that there are Christian lyrics to these songs does not negate the impact that they have on the body and the subconscious mind of the people. And it's quite dangerous. I have a letter in my new book from the Evangelical Association of Russia asking American Christian rock stars not to come to their country and perform because they feel that music is not only not spiritual, it's dangerous.
But of course, we've been told by some of our leading Christian ministers that there's no such thing as Christian music. There are only Christian lyrics, and as long as you got Christian lyrics, everything's all right. Just go ahead and bring it into the church.
Well, there's another problem that occurred. Rock music was certainly probably the most powerful musical arts style would come along in the history of music. And one of the reasons it was so powerful is because of the loud, sharp backbeat that you get in most types of rock music. It triggers what we call the fight or flight syndrome in the human brain. The brain interprets that sharp sound as danger and sends a signal to the adrenal glands. The adrenal glands then dump adrenaline into the bloodstream to give the body an extra boost if it has to turn to fight or flight or run.
And so what you're basically saying is that music has a physiological effect on the human body. And hold that thought right there for just a moment as we bring our stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon, Dr. Jack Wheaton, and we're talking about the effect of music. So you pick up the story there, Jack. You were saying that you really feel that this music, especially the rock music, has a physiological effect on people, and it actually will stimulate the adrenal gland. They'll get this they'll get this almost emotional high, which some people will actually interpret as a visitation of the Holy Spirit, but it's really simply this physiological response that comes from this truly demonic type of music. And one of the things you talked about in your book was the fact that even flowers would respond to music. They would respond one way to rock music. They would respond another way to the Bach or the traditional classic music. You even pointed out that you could take an egg and put it in front of the speakers at a rock concert and congeal the contents of that egg, and it would be just like it had been boiled. You want to tell the story? What effect does this have? How can the flowers be so much smarter than people?
Well, sound is a vibration, and actually everything in nature is made up of vibration. The nucleus of the atom is vibration. And so sound penetrates our body, and it can cause serious difficulties. For instance, when they first invented the jet engine for commercial aircraft, they noticed that a lot of the landing crew were getting sick, and they discovered that the certain frequencies given off by the jet engine was penetrating their bodies and messing up their internal organs. And so they devised a new kind of suit that they wore that had a cross weave that would break up these vibrations. And, of course, the problem with them getting sick disappeared. So music is more than what we hear. It's what we feel. And it affects all parts of our body.
All right. Now, what about the effect on flowers? I thought that was so fascinating. I've heard this before, but you actually give the background. What will the music do to the flowers?
Well, it can. Music, like anything else in nature, it has a good positive and a negative polarity. In certain kinds of music, usually classical, soft classical, or acoustic jazz, or ethnic music, can stimulate, in many instances, growth of plants and flowers. Iowa State University is one of the larger research centers for use of music in stimulating plant growth and increasing animal production on a farm. And you'll find now, if you drive across Iowa, there'll be barns where the cattle are listening to Mozart when they're being milked. The chickens are listening to Tchaikovsky, and the corn is listening to Borodin. You know, so, and they have some pretty solid statistics to back up what the positive effect. On the other hand, heavy metal and rock music has had a deleterious effect on these particular on plants, and that's pretty consistent in the research I've seen in many instances.
And so this has actually been determined scientifically, and yet, of course, we're exposing our children to this not only in the rock concerts, but in our churches.
Well, the thing is, for the first time in history that I know of, music was being used on a regular basis as a drug without people knowing it. Rock music can be addictive. The sharp backbeat stimulating the adrenaline and the rush that you get from that can be very addictive. I remember when I was jogging a few years ago before my wife told me to stop and I didn't listen to her and damaged my knees, I would get that runner's high after about 15 or 20 minutes of running. And what that was is the brain was dumping into the bloodstream certain chemicals to take away the pain and the discomfort.
They call them endorphins.
Yeah, endorphins of the running. And
right.
It was a legitimate high. And a lot of runners got hooked on it and kept running sometimes when they were not supposed to and caused some health problems. So you get there's a similar high that people get from rock music, and of course it doesn't matter whether the lyrics are Christian or non-Christian, it's the sharp backbeat and the loud volume that produces the high.
But you see, I don't think most Christians realize that. They think that if it's in the church, it must be good. And yet, of course, just because it's in the church, sometimes ministers can get sold a bill of goods by other ministers who have perhaps a different agenda.
Well, for almost 2,000 years, the church has had separate music. We've had sacred, what we call sacred music, and we've had secular music. And the two were, everybody's accepted the fact that they were two different types of music for two different purposes. And then that line got blurred in the 1960s, and part of the reason it got blurred is that people saw a tremendous profit opportunity of allowing rock music to come into the church and selling records to young people. And so it's kind of standard to have this, and it's unfortunate because every premise upon which it's built is not solid.
And you point out that it really the Christian rock is really so popular now, and a lot of our Christian bookstores make a lot of their income on that, so they're not going to carry your book because you're critical of it. How dare you criticize something that's going to hurt their income?
Well, yeah, that's true. It's sad, but I just figure it's in the Lord's hands, and He's going to get it out through programs like yours and others, and the people who are sensitive to the Holy Spirit. I'm noticing that the people who call in and who read the book and write in with positive support are people who, generally speaking, seem to be listening to the Holy Spirit in their voice and in their life. And they knew, they had a sense of discomfort and an uneasiness about this kind of music, and they didn't know how to deal with it, how to express it, and so I tried to help give them some tools on how they could talk to their pastors and their youth leaders and so forth about it.
And now I've noticed that with some of the programs we've done, there have been some very hostile calls, really condemning you and more or less condemning me for having you on, because, of course, you were putting out a message they didn't like. They like rock music, and they don't see anything wrong with it.
Well, they're probably addicted to it, and they get nervous if people start messing with their addiction. And, you know, when the hippie movement started in the 60s, out of the hippie movement came something positive, and that was the Jesus movement. But the one thing about the Jesus movement that really I felt was wrong was to allow the people who came to know Christ to keep wearing the kind of clothes and costumes that they wore, and to can bring their style of music into the church. And in so doing, we ended up with the church suddenly overnight being pretty secularized.
In other words, what they've done is by changing the music of the church, they've changed the response of the people, because doesn't this actually have a physiological and psychological impact on the people as they sing these many times rock songs and rock music? Now, they may have a few of the old classic hymns in there just to placate the older people, but doesn't this really have a deleterious effect as far as preparation for God's Word?
Well, it does. You know, I did a pretty serious study of music in the early church, and music was not the centerpiece of the early church like it is today. It was used to do three or four things. First of all, it was used to unify the body by singing something together. Then it was used to edify the body by worshiping and lifting up the name of Christ. And the third purpose of music was to drive out the evil forces that try to disrupt any Christian worship service. They can't stand to be around when the name of Christ is being raised in song in a worshipful way. And so then when the pastor got up to present the exegesis of the Word, the teaching from the Word, it went right to the heart and not just to the head. But now you've got these churches where they do 20 minutes to a half an hour of heavy rock music, and they get the people overstimulated, and then they get up and start preaching from the Word. And those people are like unruly kids. They're like children that you've given a candy bar and you let them play with each other for 10 minutes and ask them to be quiet. I mean, it's just the opposite of what you'd want from a responsive congregation.
Well, you talk about a man, I think his name was Mickey Hart, and he was a very famous rock star drummer. He wasn't necessarily Christian at all, but he actually wrote a book, and didn't he get into the fact that this was such a way to begin to approach the supernatural with a loud drum beat and these rhythms?
Yeah, Mickey wrote a very good book. He was the drummer with a very popular group called the Grateful Dead. The Grateful Dead and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, probably the three most popular rock bands in the history of rock music. And Mickey decided to spend a great deal of his life in studying rhythms from around the world and drums and so forth. And his book called Drumming at the Edge of Magic confirmed about 90% of what I'd already stumbled across in my own research. And it was, to me, it was... I think the Lord led me to that book because it allowed me to see that here was a person who didn't have a vested interest, wasn't a Christian, who just more or less validated what I had been saying about the rhythms and drums and so forth.
And he recognized, of course, in other countries how this was used to bring up, to actually put people into a frenzy and actually bring up these demonic spirits?
Right, and he talks about in his own concerts, his own programs of reaching a point where he felt he was losing total control of who he was and that there was a force working through him. And unfortunately, he saw this as a positive, exhilarating thing, but in many instances, as we know, in fact, most, it's not.
Well, there's certainly a force that you can call up with this type of music. And the average Christian, since we're not being taught much about the other dimension, about the spiritual dimension, is really relatively incapable of addressing this. And many times he'll have an emotional reaction, and he thinks it's the Holy Spirit.
That's true, and it's so sad because it's a counterfeit, and we know that Satan is good at counterfeiting.
He is the greatest counterfeiter of all time. In fact, he was an expert at music. We'll talk a little bit about that. But, you know, up in heaven we're told that Lucifer was in charge of music. Seems like many times he is right here on earth as well. We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest, Dr. Jack Wheaton. His book, Crisis in Christian Music, Part 2, The Paganization of Christian Music.
probably help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaur's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaur's book, Ill to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs, in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
In the last 3 years, gold and silver have been quietly attracting the attention of the smart money investor. And that's with no small wonder when you consider that in those last 3 years, gold has risen over 50% and silver has nearly doubled. So, are you in profit yet? You might think so if you bought gold or silver coins in the last 3 years. And true enough, some coins have increased by as much as 70%. So how do you know how much your portfolio has gained or lost? With a quick call to the asset management professionals at Colonial Resources. 1-800-685-4042. Colonial Resources will give you current market quotes on your gold or silver bullion and collector coins. If you're ready to sell, Colonial pays higher prices for your coins than almost anyone in the industry. And if you doubt that, call the company that sold them to you and ask what they'd buy them for, and then call us. To find out where you stand in the rapidly changing precious metals market, call Colonial Resources today, toll free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, Dr. Stan back here, I guess, this afternoon is Dr. Jack Wheaton. His book, titled Crisis in Christian Music, Part 2. Now, we carry Part 1 and Part 2. We think both books are very, very important, and we do have some of our tape interviews with Dr. Wheaton. You need to understand what he's talking about. You need to understand what is happening to our children when they get into these so-called worship services. And instead of course, trying to make the church different and trying to have the church's influence into the world. What we've done is we've brought the demonic influence of the world into the church, and then we wonder maybe why the church isn't really making any difference in society today. Well, Dr. Wheaton, now, of course, you've gone into the background, the history of that. You haven't told us anything about what happened to that egg, though, that you would actually put in front of the microphones, and what happened to a raw egg when you put it in front of the microphones?
Well, it was cooked. The vibrations, much like it's almost like a microwave. The vibrations coming from a large speaker at a rock concert are so powerful that they stimulate the cells in the interior of the yolk of the egg to where they harden just as if they had been put in boiling water or into a microwave. So it's a very similar process. And you must keep in mind that those same vibrations are going through your body and affecting your internal organs.
What happens to your hearing? You know, I know that many musicians develop a loss of their hearing as they go through their careers. You know, just because I'm talking now about the people in the loud rock bands. What does that do to the people out there in the audience who are listening to us on a regular basis?
Well, hearing loss is a major problem. It's interesting, we were watching the evening television news a couple nights ago, and on one of the network news they were reporting about the iPod, this new little clip-on thing you can put on your belt that you can store hundreds of songs inside it on a digital format. And then you'll see these people walking around with their headsets on, this little thing clipped to their waist. But most of them are listening to the music too loud, and with a headset, the vibration is going directly into the tympanum of the ear, and there's no room for it to escape. It hits harder than it does if it's just an acoustic sound. And so they were talking on the network news how there's people losing their hearing. But it was interesting, they interviewed several of the younger people, and they said, we like the loud sound, and that's part of why we do this. And, of course, they do like it because they're getting high off of it. Their adrenal glands are overstimulating them. And, you know, another thing they're discovering is that the overstimulation of the adrenal glands weakens the immune system on the individual if it continues over many years, and it also has a deleterious effect on the nervous system.
And you mentioned earlier, of course, what it did to the flowers, and the rock music would do that, but it actually will have an effect on our immune system as well?
Well, yes. They find that the overstimulation of the nervous system, because it's actually like yelling fire, and you jump out of your seat and you get ready to go put a fire out, and your body gets all stimulated, and then you sit down, and then somebody yells fire again. Well, if that keeps up, after a while, it wears you out, and over a period of years, it's very difficult on the nervous system.
Well, now, what about the great old hymns of the church? You know, the hymns that were really so full of praise and the word of the Lord, and they seem to draw you closer to the presence of the Lord. Certainly, this had a great and wonderful benefit, you know, on the church and the stability of our society, didn't it?
Well, they are, and they were not promoted by a record company trying to make a buck. They were hymns that people brought to the altar of God and lifted up in worship to Him. And if they became popular, it's because the congregations sensed their spirituality, not because some agent was pushing them to buy the CD. That's another thing, that we have kind of a false popularity here today. We don't know whether Christian music today, some of the big hits are popular because there's a spiritual message or just because they were promoted cleverly.
And, of course, the thing is that Christian rock music is so popular today. They have these big rock concerts, but as you pointed out, they also have the mosh pit there. And we're going to get back for our listeners who don't know what a mosh pit is. Why, of course, we'll let Dr. Wheaton tell you. But they have them at the secular rock festivals. They have them at the Christian rock festivals. We're going to be back in just a moment. With Dr. Jack Wheaton talking about his books, first of all, Crisis in Christian Music, and the latest one, Crisis in Christian Music Part 2, The Paganization of Worship.
That will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, Inroad to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Jack Wheaton. We're talking about his book, The Crisis in Christian Music, Volume 2, The Paganization of Worship. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We're here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, of course, we remember the great old songs, The Mighty Fortress Is Our God, The Old Rugged Cross, Amazing Grace. There's so many of the wonderful old hymns that, but so often today, why they don't have the hymn books there. They've sort of done away with the hymn books, and we'll have maybe one or two of the old songs, and then a lot of contemporary songs. Now, are all contemporary songs not so good? Are some of them quite acceptable? And how do we know whether music is acceptable or is not acceptable?
Well, there's a litmus test that I outlined in Volume 1 that helps people determine this. First of all, if it's too loud, it doesn't belong in the church. Good music does not have to be ear-splitting to be good. In fact, it's the opposite of good when it's ear-splitting. Secondly, if it has too sharp a backbeat, if you hear the predominance of the drummer and you hear the sharp bang and backbeat constant through the song, be suspect, because that's triggering the fight-or-flight syndrome. The third thing, if the lyrics are oversimplified and repetitious, what I call bumper sticker lyrics, where they just go over a line over and over, that is hallucinogenic and can set up the first stage of hypnosis, and it's not spiritual, and it's deadly dangerous. The cults have used that for centuries to put people in an altered state of consciousness. And then the next point is the lyric content itself should be scriptural, it should be dignified, and it should honor Christ, and it should be Christ-centered, not individual-centered. I'm disturbed by so many of the lyrics of the contemporary Christian songs that are centered on the person and how they feel. And Jesus kind of their buddy and their friend and whatever, but they're not Christ-centered in many instances. Now, I do want to go on record to say there's been some wonderful, sanctified, Holy Spirit-filled Christian music written in the last 25, 30 years or so. You know, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bath, but those are some of the qualifications that you can use to determine whether a piece of music is fit for a worship service. And that's another point. Some of this music that teenagers want to listen to, maybe for an outreach program, even then I think it's dangerous, but you might at least allow, but there's a big difference about that and a worship service. The word sanctuary means sanctify, set apart, holy, called out from the world. And when we bring the world into the sanctuary, it compromises the very essence of what Christianity is all about.
Well, now, of course, some people like jazz. They like jazz music. Is there anything wrong with jazz music?
Well, no. I'm past president of the International Association of Jazz Educators, and I have a jazz quartet, which I perform with, and I have a big band, which I arrange for. And I find it to be, an exciting and fun kind of music, but I would no more think of taking it into the sanctuary for worship, because it just... It doesn't fit. It doesn't work.
And I think that's really the issue. There's nothing wrong with jazz music as such. It's outside of the church. But bringing it into the church, just because we want to make the church more comfortable for people who are pagans, why we're not having an influence on them. They're having an influence on us. But if you speak out about that, at least in certain places, why, you'll get into all sorts of problems. And then I think that Dr. Wheaton has been very courageous in doing what needs to be done. And that's why his book is so important. It's simple to read. And you'll have at your fingertips so much knowledge of certainly of music, the things that I've never thought of before. You actually talk about the various components of music in your book. You want to discuss a little bit about that, the between the rhythm and the counter-rhythm and all of these things?
Yes, I would. Before we do, I want to get back to a point you brought up just before our last commercial, and that was the word mosh pit.
All right, fine. Let's get into the mosh pit.
And I think people should know what that is. They were having so much trouble controlling audiences with rock concerts that back in the 70s, 80s, they just stopped putting them on. You couldn't buy the insurance. The insurance was so prohibitive because they expected people to damage things and so forth.
And really, of course, it brought out all sorts of destructive elements, at least in certain people.
Well, see, when they get fired up with this fight or flight syndrome, then they have all this energy pulsating through them, and it also makes a person extremely aggressive. So they found a compromise, and that they created what they call a mosh pit. It's in front of the stage. They surround it with usually burly bodyguards, and anybody who gets overly stimulated can go down into the mosh pit and bang around on somebody else. Now, you can't go in there and start swinging and hitting people in the mouth with your fist, but you can bang into them with your bodies. You can go over and bang this person, and he bangs you back. It's just like those bumper cars we used to have at the amusement parks. And it allowed some of this excess aggression to be, let out without causing serious problems.
And, of course, this is a very important part of at least the response of some people to this type of music.
Yeah, it is. And it's almost involuntary. And now they have these mosh pits at Christian rock concerts, which should make, parents wonder what this music's doing to their kids if they get so aggressive that they have to go down and bang into other people to to get rid of all this aggression that's building up inside of them.
Well, of course, we recently had in the Monterey Bay area an international Christian music festival. Of course, it was a Christian rock. And what was amazing was that people came from all over the world. And I mean, there are thousands and thousands of young people coming to this this rock music concert just because it had a Christian label on the front of it. But is there much Christian about much of this?
Well, and a lot of times people will say, well, gee, the kids aren't on drugs. Well, the music it's being used is a drug. And no, in most Christian festivals, they are pretty careful about using recreational drugs, but the music itself can be used as a drug, and that's something that people need to understand.
And remember, if it can fry an egg, what is it doing to your child's brain?
That's right.
Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Certainly our guest today is Dr. Jack Wheaton, his book Crisis in Christian Music, Part 2. And you talk here, I have a whole section about the Afro-American church and the Afro-American music. Do you want to explore that a little bit?
Well, the Afro-American church is ironically more sensitive to the dangers of certain styles and rhythms in music than we are, generally speaking. They're very careful. Now, their music can be fairly repetitious, and it can be fairly syncopated, but it's carefully selected, and they're very, very careful about not letting it get into the sensual area. That's important to know. And in the African church in Africa, as much like the Russian church, they don't allow American Christian rock music to come back into their services because they sense some of these rhythms were used in some of their tribal religions, and they don't see that belongs. So they're much more aware of this problem than we are.
I was just reading some of the things that you talked about, Mickey Hart. Now, remember, Mickey Hart is certainly not a Christian at all. He's a place where Grateful Dead?
Grateful Dead.
Right. And he said Africans, particularly West Africans, believe that the spirits ride the drumbeat down into the body of the dancers, who then begin that erratic shaking movement of the possessed. Mm-hmm. And he goes on, of course, to talk, you know, in great length about certainly the effect that it can have. Imagine the soundscape 50,000 years ago. Noise meant danger, possibly death, and understanding rooted in the oldest part of the brain, in the fight-or-flight program that activates the adrenals and prepares the organism for immediate action. That is what the Hindu knew on a cosmic scale. There is a terror in noise, and in that terror there is also power. And ladies and gentlemen, that's what's in our churches today. That's written by a pagan, Mickey Hart. At least he's not a Christian at all, but he recognizes what's going on. I'm concerned that so many of our spiritual leaders don't seem to recognize.
There was a companion book which I referred to quite often, and it's called The Twilight Labyrinth by George Otis Jr. And, George is a Christian and has written some wonderful books about Christianity. And in The Twilight Labyrinth, he decides to go visit the places in the world that are spiritually very dark, like Tibet in India and the Himalayas mountains and certain places in the Middle East and Africa. And in his book, he validates again what Mickey Hart said and what I've said, that these tribal religions use certain rhythmic patterns to call up these spirits, who generally attach themselves to one or two weaker people in the group, and then they start speaking or acting through them. And there's a lot of correlation going on out there now. It's not just a matter of a person's opinion. There's solid scientific evidence now about things that we've been talking about.
But don't get people really get almost psychologically or physically hooked on this music?
Well, yeah, of course. They miss that adrenaline rush, and so they turn on their records and crank them up loud, and then they get it, and it gives them this excess energy. And so, yes, of course, that's why there's such anger. I find it quite often. Interestingly enough, I don't get too much negative mail or negative phone calls. But when I do, they're almost always, it has to do with, gee, maybe somebody's going to take my drugs away from me, you know. I mean, they don't realize that, but it's underneath their anxiety is this losing this thing that overstimulates their adrenaline glands.
And of course, you point out, you know, this play it and they will come. That's a sort of that takeoff on the movie.
Yeah.
You know, about build it and they'll come. Build it, this baseball stadium, and the people will come to see the baseball games. Well, but you say that the same thing goes on in our churches today. Play this sort of music because it's going to draw in the crowds.
Well, it may, as we know, there's a lot of mega churches that are doing this kind of music, but the problem is that they've transferred a worship service into a field of entertainment. People are no longer going to worship God, they're going to be entertained. And when you do that, you better come up with a bigger show every week, because if you don't, you're going to start losing your people, because they're coming there for the show. And you better have laser lights and angels flying on invisible wires and all kinds of stuff, because that's what you've entered. When you leave the world of biblical worship, you enter the world of entertainment.
And, of course, that's how you get the people to come. A lot of people want to be entertained. But
if
the church was really influencing society, why is our society in so much trouble today? Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling us from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes, and a little of both. You know, in the field of dreams, it wasn't just the people who would come, but it was the demons also, the spirits of baseball.
Right.
And so that's what you get with the rock music. But I want to ask, how do you reach pastors about this? Because 12 years ago, we had a local church here that actually they had this rock, so-called Christian rock band, and they invited the kids to mosh right down front. They'd taken all the seats out of the sanctuary and turned it into a little rock concert with a mosh pit. And I got time afterwards with the pastor himself to have a little head-to-head, quiet, peaceful, respectful chat with him, but I don't think I got anywhere.
And,
when the pastors themselves are convinced that this is okay, where are they getting these ideas from?
All right, well, let's ask the question. Where do the pastors, don't they understand that some of this is truly demonic?
Well, what happened, and it's one of the founts of this was Robert Schuller, who started a church in a drive-in movie theater back in the 1950s, and started using more and more Madison Avenue corporate techniques and advertising techniques to get people into his church, and of course he was successful. And people like Rick Warren were disciples of Robert Schuller, and they more or less studied at his feet. And it's a whole different approach to attracting people to go to church.
But it was really very, very successful, and they've done, you know, they have mega churches. This is a sign of success, isn't it?
Well, but you know, I've just been doing a Bible study for my Bible class via email during our summer break on the Upper Room Discourse in John 14-17. Christ says so clearly in John 16, he says, "The world hated me, don't be surprised if they hate you." Well, we're supposed to, if we're not being hated, the world loves us, and there's something probably not quite right.
Okay, Mike, did you have anything else you wanted to ask?
Well, I'm just curious, how do you reach a pastor?
How do you
make any sense with these guys?
Well, you need to get him into Scripture. You need to find scriptural passages, and you need to challenge him on his validation. Is his validation coming from Madison Avenue, or is it coming from the Bible? And if it's coming from Madison Avenue, then you need to shake the dust off your feet and find another church.
And I think the trouble is today, Mike, that just because you're successful doesn't mean you're necessarily doing God's work.
Yeah, chances are you're not.
Okay. Yeah. Anything else you
want
to say?
Enough. Okay,
thanks very much. Okay, fine. Well, I think the church today is in real problems. And, you know, all we need to do is look at society and ask ourselves, you know, is the church really having an impact on society? What's the attitude of our young people towards abortion, towards life, towards premarital sex, towards homosexuality? What's their attitude towards God? And if, of course, if they're not drawing closer to God, then the church, I think, has really failed in its purpose to certainly go into all the lands, but into our own country to maintain the stability of our once Christian nation. We're just about out of time. Dr. Wheaton, do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Well, be of good cheer, because this was all predicted. If you read the outline of the seven churches in Revelation 2 and 3, you'll find in the last two churches, the Philadelphian churches was humble, and it was scriptural, stayed close to the Word of God. And the other church was the Laodicean church, was very worldly, very wealthy, and there's a sad scene where Christ is knocking on the door trying to get into his own church. So, I mean, it means the Lord's coming soon, and it means that every Christian needs to choose very carefully where they're going to worship.
I agree with you totally. Well, thank you so very much. My guest has been Dr. Jack Wheaton, his book, Crisis in Christian Music, The Paganization of Worship. God bless. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination, a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of an American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM?
If you're looking, have you purchased or invested in gold and silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or coin dealer. To find out if you've been taken advantage of, or if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that could cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. The call and the advice are free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we hope that many of you will want to get the books we've talked about. The first one was The Crisis in Christian Music. The second is The Crisis in Christian Music, Volume 2, The Paganization of Worship. Dr. Wheaton has a tremendous insight into what's going on. We recommend it. We also have, of course, a four-tape set on musical madness. And unfortunately, why, if you go to one of the churches, the mega churches, that is using this sort of music, you really need to understand the effect it has on you physiologically, morally, and of course, spiritually. So understand that there are dark spiritual forces out there. There's a wonderful video and DVD we have. It's called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. You can get the 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour version. And I will tell you that after you've watched these videos, you will never look at the music industry the same, because many of these people will openly admit that they have sold their souls to the devil. They know exactly what they're doing, but of course they've had tremendous prosperity. They have had tremendous advantage in popularity, but of course at what price? And this is the sort of thing that many of our so-called Christian performers have done exactly the same thing. And they mix a little Christianity in there, but they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know, and they certainly don't want you to know what they're doing to your children. So if you'd like to get the video, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour version, it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. And I promise you, after you've watched that 10-hour version, you will never look at the world quite through the same eyes again. And then, of course, we have two videos, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. They are both available on DVD, and I think one of them is available on video. And they take you into the background of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. And, of course, Megiddo 1 goes into the prophecies of Edgar Cayce and Nostradamus, and compares those with the prophecies of the Bible. And of course, if you're a prophet, you can't make a mistake if you're a prophet of God. But there are people who are prophets that come from the dark side, because there really is a spiritual battle taking place. Of course, the Megiddo 2 is over 3 hours. I have a little part in that. We talk about the Georgia Guidestones, about Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, who was a Satanist, one of the most influential women of the 18th century, and of course I should say the 19th century. She actually formed the Theosophical Society in 1872, and so many things happened in that period, whether it was 1872, 1875, I don't know, but her books were read by people like Margaret Sanger and Adolf Hitler. And this is what energized the Nazi movement. This is what energized the Planned Parenthood. And, of course, some of our great inventors actually were her disciples. And some of the most successful people were her disciples. And you become a disciple to these people who are truly demonically possessed, and you can get some of their power and knowledge as well, but at the price of your eternal soul. You need to get our four-tape set on Satanism and deliverance. You need to get our four-tape set on Aleister Crowley, a wonderful book we carry, The Beautiful Side of Evil, going into the background of Johanna Michelson's experience as she began, you know, as a sorcerer's apprentice. As she actually helped this psychic healer who had supernatural power. And she was beginning to assume some of that power until she suddenly realized that she was working in the demonic realm. And your book, really, The Beautiful Side of Evil, we recommend to you. You'll be our guest, I think, Thursday of this week on our evening program. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.